Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the first season of CSS Nouveau, how to organize your global style sheets. It's always best to start at the beginning. Quote, there are only two hard things in computer science, cache invalidation and naming things. Quote by Phil Carlton. Yeah, we've all heard this line before, but like with many truisms, there's actually a lot of truth to this. Naming things, and cache invalidation for that matter, can be quite challenging. Some people like finding solutions where they don't have to name things. Or at least the names can be more practical and immediate, less philosophical and big picture. A function name like gonculateWidgetData could make sense if you're writing a function to, well, gonculate the widget data, right? But if you had to employ a more abstracted, object-oriented pattern, you'd have to figure out what the widget represents, and then figure out how to model the data, and then figure out which object, or another one entirely, is responsible for the final gonculating. Too much work, too confusing, it'll take too long. I may be a weirdo, okay, I am, but I find naming things to be one of the most satisfying and rewarding aspects of programming. Rather than a step I'd like to remove or reduce as much as possible, I want to spend copious amounts of time on it. I've often found that the more time you spend up front figuring out the ubiquitous language of your problem domain, there's a link there to more information about that, and visualizing the high-level concerns of your code base before slowly working inward to fill in the details, the more you get your product right the first time in terms of code comprehension and maintainability. We'll talk much more about these concepts as the series progresses, but for now, just file ubiquitous language away in the, interesting bucket of your mind, Pim. So when it comes to the design of your website and the how of writing CSS to achieve your design goals, I always think it's best to start at the highest conceptual level and then methodically work your way down the line. The pyramid approach to styling. Brad Frost, well known for advocating for design systems and web UI, created this simple chart, which I really appreciate. And on this chart, there's three sections of a pyramid. The base of the pyramid, it says, design system components, standalone library, content agnostic, context agnostic, cross-product, maximal reuse. And then midway up the pyramid, it says recipes, reusable within a product, compositions of design system components. And then at the tip of the pyramid, it says snowflakes, one-offs, use sparingly. I like the way this shows a clear progression from the global to the specific. You start with reusable, content, and context-agnostic components, and we'll start our conversation even deeper in the stack with system-wide, mostly classless HTML style sheets. Then you progress to combinations of components, which themselves form common patterns you might encounter multiple times throughout a project. Then finally, you progress to those one-offs. Bespoke designs you might need to work on occasionally, with new custom styles in tow, but are hopefully rare. For the rest of this episode, let's take a look at an approach to organizing our global style sheets, which sit at the very base of this stack. The entry point, index.css. Assuming you have a folder called styles, in which you can add multiple style sheet files, let's take a look at your entry point file, typically named index.css. The question of what you put in your index style sheet, or how much, has varied for me over the years, but I've come to the point where I put nothing in it but imports. At import, turtles all the way down. Thus, index.css itself doesn't do anything. It simply serves as the base plate upon which you set up everything else. So the next question is, what exactly do you import? The first category of imports I'd recommend is fonts and design tokens. If you have specific font style sheets which reference related font files, you can import those right away. Then import the style sheets for your design tokens. We'll be covering design tokens in depth in the next episode. Maybe you just have a single variables.css file with all of your tokens. Or you could break them out into categories like colors.css, sizes.css, fonts.css, etc. It really just depends on the size of your project. And of course, as your project scales, it may make sense to break up one file into several placed into a subfolder. After fonts and tokens, I import a style sheet I typically call global.css. This covers the most basic aspects of styling your HTML, with selectors such as body, A, main, HR, etc., as well as a few reset rules such as box sizing, border box, which we covered in the previous episode. If you prefer, you can create your own reset.css file and import that before you import global.css. Depending on the size of your project, you can put basic typographical style rules in global CSS for tags like H1, P, block quote, etc., or you can break those out into a style sheet you might call something like typography.css. Also, depending on the size of your project, you can add default styles for form, input, button, etc. to global.css, or you can break those out into a forms.css file. Design categories. From here on out, I might create a few different style sheets for various categories of design work across the site. For example, layout.css, for setting up styles for common layouts throughout your HTML templates. Lists.css, if you have multiple variants of UL, OL, DL, etc. styles. Tables.css, for HTML tables. Content.css, for prose sections, blogging concerns, markdown, etc. Syntax.css, if you need to display any code or other technical data. What's vitally crucial to understand is, by and large, we're not dealing with custom classes or widgets or specific design templates or anything like that at this level. This is the realm of classless CSS, a concept we'll evaluate more specifically in episode 5. However, there are exceptions to every rule. So maybe, on that one particular landing page or that one particular app screen, you need to tweak things. Page-specific style rules. Is this a code smell? Probably. But I think it's foolish to ignore the fact that at one point or another, you're going to have a page or a layout template on your site where you need something tweaked at the page level. In those cases, I'll put a special class on body and then use that to scope a few choice rules. For example, if you use the tag body class equals calendar for an events calendar page, you can then use that for scoping. And there's a code example. I highly recommend being prudent in authoring any page-specific style rules. Remember the pyramid graph shown above? You want to maximize the amount of work you do lower in the design system stack and minimize global one-offs. Try as much as possible to use component variants on various page templates to achieve your goals for a markup-based solution to this problem. I also caution against the temptation to create standalone page-specific style sheets, which get imported alongside other global style sheets. In other words, if you ever find yourself creating an events-calendar.css file to style on an events calendar page, you're probably doing it wrong. See the aside below for alternative approaches when absolutely needed. A grab bag of page-specific global style sheets would be a clear example of the dreaded append-only problem of authoring CSS, a road which leads to madness. Because sure, you might only have 5 or 10 page templates early on in your project, but eventually you'll wake up one day and realize you have 50, and they're all littered with custom CSS. Doh! Instead, try to find ways to contain scoped style rules at the component level. For instance, we could express the above example by defining a true header component, one where one variant of that header component would be to use the fancy font for its title. Then in the markup for the events calendar, you could utilize that header variant right from your template markup, rather than relying on a custom body class and related global CSS. We'll cover these sorts of concepts much more in episodes 6, 7, and 8. That being said, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. If you only adhere rigidly to component scope styles and refuse ever to style anything at the page level, you'll occasionally find yourself introducing unnecessary complexity to your design system or a patterns library. If you have 50 different types of pages on your site and find that only one or two need something unique for aesthetic or content-centric reasons, there's no shame in adding a few body.snowflake sort of rules to a pages.css file. Aside, an alternative approach might just be to stick an extra style tag at the bottom of your Snowflake page. Arguably, that's a perfectly valid vanilla way to do it, but there are also various site frameworks which will ingest page-level style tags and run them through code splitting, slash processing, slash bundling, etc. concerns. Could be the right way to go on large projects so you don't bloat your primary CSS bundle. Continuing along those lines, you might use a tool such as is-land, looks like island, to load a particular island on a particular page. And that's a GitHub project, which is linked here, which could come with both CSS and JS concerns. Depending on what's processed by your framework, you might still need to scope via CSS selectors as described above. The cool thing about using island is you can control exactly when CSS and JS code gets loaded and executed. Only download what the user actually needs when they need it. Nice. Vendor style sheets. This is less common with the arrival of the NPM ecosystem and bundlers, but you may still find yourself needing to download a style sheet or two for a particular package, plugin, add-on, whatever you want to call it. In those cases, you can create a vendor folder within styles and sequester everything there, and then import accordingly, possibly in a way which doesn't bloat your primary CSS bundle. Small project examples. So putting this all together, let's look at the folder structure of a few examples of small projects where you only need a handful of style sheet files. We'll sort by order of import, not alphabetically. So in this example, in the styles folder, we have index.css, variables.css, global.css, and content.css. Or index.css, font style sheets in another folder, global.css, content.css, syntax.css. Or index.css, variables.css, global.css, forms.css, pages.css. Large project example. Now let's look at a larger project which breaks out quite a few files, and you'd almost certainly want to be using some kind of bundler in this scenario so the browser doesn't have to download literally dozens of files. Or are we past worrying about that in the HTTP 2, 3, etc. era? Your mileage may vary. So here inside of styles, we have index.css, variables folder with borders.css, colors.css, fonts.css, individual font style sheets, and sizes.css. And then back up in the styles folder, we have reset.css, global.css, layout.css, typography.css, forms.css, lists.css, tables.css, content.css, pages.css, and then a vendor folder with some third-party package.css. Whew. I honestly wouldn't recommend such a sophisticated set of files right off the bat, unless you know in advance your project will grow exponentially. There's little harm in starting with fewer files, then moving some style rules into new files when, if, that's necessary for code comprehension. I'd rather do that than start out with a slew of files where each file only has a few lines for an extended period of time. You'll be jumping around files way too often. Aside. Heads up, the time is coming, and perhaps it is already here, when you'll want to add an extra, pardon the pun, layer to your style sheet organization, and that's to use Cascade Layers, with a link to a video I made and a link to the docs on MDN. This exciting new feature of CSS in 2023 and beyond lets you break apart styles into well-defined layers. Each new at layer will implicitly override any styles in lower layers, regardless of specificity. No more, bang, important rules required. So if you were to evaluate the examples above, you could imagine placing various style sheets into a variables layer, a global or base layer, typography or elements layer, components, theme, overrides, etc. We'll hope to cover this in greater detail in the next season of CSS Nouveau. What you won't find in these examples. So far, we've covered how to organize your style sheets at somewhat of a macro level across your website project, but we haven't yet covered where you may actually spend the bulk of your styling time, on larger projects at least, which is the component library. I feel pretty strongly about the fact that your component-level style sheets should not live alongside your global style sheets. In other words, you should not be putting cards.css or navbar.css or accordion.css or popupcalendar.css next to typography.css and layout.css. Our global level style sheets are mostly concerned with styling semantic HTML tags, common layouts, and perhaps a handful of custom elements, which aren't really components in the web components written in JavaScript sense of the word. For bona fide components, I recommend putting your style sheets right alongside your component templates and .js and other related files, and thus your components will likely live inside folders named for those components, or at least component categories. We'll cover all this in depth in later episodes. In cases where you're importing a third-party component library such as Shoelace, and not merely building your own components from scratch, you may not need to spend much time with the setup of a component library folder structure. Instead, you might just author one style sheet with any overrides for the third-party library so it matches your own design. For instance, on one project, I literally have a global shoelacecustomizations.css file where I tweak some of Shoelace's design tokens and change a few component styles here and there via part selectors. And here's a code example. This adds a slight blur effect to Shoelace dialog boxes as they open and close. If you have just a handful of styles across multiple custom elements and don't want too many files, you could just add customelements.css and leave it at that. But I'd be very careful this doesn't end up yet another grab bag of dozens or hundreds of various style rules. How to communicate your style sheet organizational approach to newbies. If you're working on a solo project, you can probably just skip over this section. But on any project of a particular size where you'll be interacting with other team members or contributors, you'll likely want to document your approach to style sheet organization. Arguably a benefit to using off-the-shelf CSS frameworks like Bootstrap or Tailwind is you get documentation for free, aka someone jumping into the project may already have knowledge of Bootstrap, Tailwind, etc., or if they don't, the docs are online for everyone to see. In your bespoke vanilla CSS setup, it could be anything. It could be utterly bewildering. Or it could be logical and simple to grok. That's up to you. So for the love of all that is semantic, please take the time to write up some documentation. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. I recommend sticking a markdown file right in your repo, perhaps just leveraging your README. Or you can build documentation into something like Storybook or a static site style guide, which would really kick ass, especially as you get into more advanced component design. Aside, this isn't an official endorsement, but having used zero height on a large project, I'm pretty impressed by what's enabled by using this. If you really need to go hardcore with your design theme documentation, I'd evaluate a tool like Zero Height. You can also experiment with sprinkling comments into your style sheets to break up various groupings or categories of rules within a single file. If you must err on any side, I certainly advocate for erring on the side of too many comments rather than too few. This holds true across the entire code base. So with good documentation in place, if a contributor is wondering, how do I style this particular hero in the header? Or how do I tweak the layout of my form on this particular screen? You should already have the answers to those questions. Or you should be close enough that if you point the contributor to a certain style sheet or code example, they'll be able to get up to speed quickly. In summary, the answer to style sheets run amok and bespoke CSS hell and all the other complaints you typically hear isn't to just throw up your hands and abandon vanilla CSS. It's to get smarter about the architecture of your vanilla CSS. It's a skill just like any other, a skill you can learn and impart to others. I've done it. Many, many devs have done it. You can do it too. In the next episode, we'll start looking into how to define our design tokens by using CSS variables. As you start to write your style sheets, you almost never want to be adding things like body background, particular hex color, or H1, margin 2 rem. As much as possible, everything should flow out of a robust set of design tokens. Here we go. This concludes episode 3 of the first season of CSS Nouveau. Please move on to episode 4 to continue.